Welcome to another edition of Stokes and Folks. I'm your host, Spencer Stokes, and I know all of my loyal listeners, all eight of you, have been sad because we've been on a little bit of a hiatus, but we're back, and I think appropriately so. We're back for this will air the first of the year, and we're back with, I think, Jerry, you're the executive director of the Southeastern Utah Association of Local Governments. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, and we have with us Jade as well. Give us your title, Jade.
I'm Jade Powell, and I'm the deputy director at the Southeastern Utah Association of Local Governments.
Fantastic. So this is something I don't think very many Utahns know a lot about. And what surprises me, you encompass a four-county area, and the four counties are almost a fourth geographically of the state of Utah. I mean, it's a large landmass. So what are the four counties you have?
Carbon, Emery, Grand, and San Juan. And we are definitely more land than people.
Correct. But that also creates a bunch of unique challenges. But local governments rely upon you down in that area to deliver a whole bunch of services which are so critically needed, from weatherization to, I think, Meals on Wheels to, I think you may call it something different. I don't know if you call it Meals on Wheels, but the bottom line is, without you and your organization, the county, those four counties would not, you know, have somebody to administer those programs. So give us a little of your background first, and then we're going to get a little of Jade's background.
Well, can I discuss the background of an AOG and why
Absolutely.
They were even created?
Yeah.
So about 50 plus years ago, AOGs, Association of Governments.
Is this your attempt to not talk about you?
That would be
Jerry?
Lovely.
Okay,
yes.
But we're going to get back to you after you give this. I'll let you just take the show hostage and do what you want first. Okay, go ahead.
So, Association of Governments, and they are nationwide. They just can be called different things, like Council of Governments or something like that. But block grants, federal block grants, were like a community service block grant, community development block grant. They have a minimal amount of money, not enough money to be spread across counties and cities. So they develop these regional organizations to deliver these services through these block grants. And then the EDA, the Economic Development Administration, around the same time, developed economic development districts. And so we have both of those at our Association of Governments.
You also run the Southeastern Utah Economic Development District.
Yes.
And I think people along the Wasatch Front, because the counties are big enough along the Wasatch Front that they run most of the programs that you run for four counties inside their county government. But in rural parts of the state, their organization isn't big enough to be able to do that. And I think people along the Wasatch Front would be familiar with the Wasatch Front Regional Council, which would be a similar organization to yours.
And what's unique about that organization, even they're one of the seven Association of Governments in the state, but they focus mainly on transportation. They
right.
don't run community service kind of programs.
I know that they never like it when I say, you know, ask, I didn't think you guys did anything other than transportation, but that's mainly what they do. And they do it for, I think, Morgan, Weber, Davis, and Salt Lake counties, the Wasatch Front Regional Council. So what you have, how many employees there?
We have about 66.
And kind of ticked off a couple of them, but I know you do regional planning, but tick off some of the other programs you run.
So regional planning, that is something that is funded by the Community Impact Board. So we've received about $150,000 for that. We have one planner for the entire region and a part-time planner. In addition to that, we run weatherization that you had already mentioned, and that's energy savings. It's to offer socioeconomic families, challenged families with energy safety. and safety in their home and those kind of things.
Do you have, did the teams actually go out and help do weatherization?
Yeah, they even put in insulation in a home to help make it just a little, have the energy savings it needs. They put even these Nest thermostats in the home, just those windows that'll replace windows, those kind of things. It's an interesting program, but it's all about energy savings. And it comes from federal dollars, so Department of Energy and LIHEAP.
So it has a greater good, not just specifically it's helpful to that family that lives there, but it has a greater good on energy usage across the grid. And
yes.
Okay. Yeah.
So and with weatherization, we also, it kind of crosses over into our housing program. It's called Self-Help. It's ran with USDA, Community Development Block Grant Dollars, and Olean Walker Dollars. So across the board, we try to maybe take a home that's dilapidated in some way, and we have a specific balance to help improve that home and make it more safe for somebody to live in, even seniors to live in as well. And however, with the current housing trends, there, a house now is so dilapidated, we don't have enough funds to actually fix that home. There's just not enough money anymore. And what we've transitioned into is kind of a ground up. So we currently have four houses that we're doing this ground up program and building an actual home, and they'll have sweat equity into the home. USDA.
So do you find that a more efficient use of the money than
Absolutely.
Trying to go in and completely repair a dilapidated home?
Yes. We just don't have enough money anymore to fix them.
So what was the turning point on that? Who decided, hey, what, it would be a lot less expensive for us to actually go, you know, have the homeowner put in sweat equity, build a home with our help and instruction? What was the turning point? Because, you know, we in government, we oftentimes think, well, we continue to do the same old thing. So we've got the money, we fix up the home. We don't do a ground up home, you know.
It was just that our housing stock was diminishing. I mean, it was that simple. And USDA had this program, and we asked if we could do four. Normally they do about 8 homes, but we're a smaller area. We wanted to make sure it was successful. It's our first time doing this, and it helps people in those income ranges, maybe like police officers, teachers, even AOG.
That you're trying to keep in an area where they may not otherwise. You may not have enough teachers or police officers or amazing.
And just improving our housing stock. We have some developments going on as well, but even those four homes help tremendously with that specific income group.
Right.
So.
Okay, I want to know, and so you've avoided talking about this. How did you get into this? What's your pathway to this?
Well,
and we're gonna, you be thinking, Jade, because we're asking you the same thing when we're done with Jerry.
So, this is very personal, I guess. I went through a divorce.
That's what we are, a very personal podcast. So.
So I went through a divorce. Actually, with my first husband, we lived in Sandy, Utah, for quite a few years. We divorced because he became an opioid addict. But through that divorce, I grew up in Emory County. I graduated from Emory County High.
Okay.
But I had been away for like 25 years. When I was a very young kid, we had moved. When I was 12, we had moved to Price, Utah from Virginia Beach, Virginia.
Wow.
Bit of a culture shock. So so I was familiar with the area, but I had gone to my current husband. Brought me back to the area. It was during when I divorced, it was during that whole 2008-2009 crash, and where I was living I had moved to St. George to be near my parents through the divorce, so my daughter had some support, and St. George really had a hit because it was mostly a construction town.
Oh, yeah.
So they really had a hit through that whole crash. So I had decided to move back to Price for us to marry, and it would be better for me because I could transfer with Department of Workforce Services. So that's where I was working.
Okay.
And through that, I decided.
So obviously, did you work when John Pierpont, the governor's chief of staff, was
amazing. I'm a huge fan of him.
Okay.
Yeah, he's impressive. He's done, he would write personal cards to all his staff, all the entire team. He also did challenges like the $4 a day for food stamps, and his whole family did it. And
he must be impressive because there's a memorial to him in the Workforce Services building.
A memorial
when you
to
walk
him?
In. Yeah, there's a big John Pierpont wall. So I'm only assuming that it was impressive based on that.
He truly isn't. I'm a huge fan of John Pierpont. And he also, when Department of Workforce Services took on vocational rehabilitation, he also did the challenge with a disability. And I think he chose being deaf. And so with his hearing impairment, he did the whole day and tried to run his meetings and even had to cancel meetings because he couldn't make it work. So I just think he's impressive how he truly dives in and tries to experience what he's actually delivering.
Yeah, so, that is impressive.
Yeah. So anyway, with Department of Workforce Services, I had gained my master's degree after the divorce.
So you went back to school,
yes,
got your master's.
My MBA.
Okay.
And so what was interesting, I'm like, I don't want to, in rural, job positions don't open up frequently. So they advertised at the Association of Governments for a job. So I applied and they actually offered me the position. And that's what brought me to the Association of Governments.
Wow.
And I started out in community service with the food banks and heat. And
so
all that.
Doing on the front lines what your agency's currently delivering.
Yes.
That's amazing because that gives you a greater perspective of what those employees are dealing with because you've already dealt with it. Jade, what was your pathway? How do you pronounce your acronym?
I don't. We don't ever.
You don't ever? No.
Everyone else does it. We just call ourselves AOG.
Southeastern AOG.
Yeah.
Okay. You don't have you don't try to go with
No.
Suolug.
No. We know what people are trying to say when they do it, but we don't do it ourselves.
It's a long acronym.
It is.
So you're the AOG.
And you already reminded us we can't say anything bad on this.
Right.
Try
yeah.
To repeat
that's
what Stuart calls us.
Right. I start out every podcast saying don't say the F word.
Yeah.
Other than that, you're all good. Yeah. We're an adult. This is an adult podcast. So yeah.
Stuart just calls us Southeastern whole lot of letters.
It's accurate.
But they also came up with we were a superhero firm too. So they have some funny takes on our name.
Yeah, a lot of them, instead of saying Association of Local Governments, it's the Associated League of Governments.
There you go. Well, you do have an L in the, so I get it. Yeah. So how did you get there?
So I was born and raised in Price, Utah, in Carbon County, and I did all my education there.
In Price, not in Helper.
Yeah.
In Price.
In
Price. Okay.
Good. Thank you for making that.
Right.
That difference there. And I graduated from Utah State University Eastern with a business administration
degree. So you went after the name change.
I did.
Okay. So I don't even
CEU.
Remember what it was. Yeah, CEU, College of Eastern Utah.
Yeah, that name change happened. It started to happen right around my end of my junior high days, and it was in full effect by the time I was.
Do you like how he can revert back to junior high days like it was yesterday?
Yeah, exactly. Yes, I do appreciate that. And I also appreciate that you, you're probably, I would imagine it gives your degree a boost when it's a USU. That would be helpful, I think.
I would think so. I've only had to use it once to get the job at the AOG, so I don't know how much. But I was going to school, and I had interviewed for a job at a place in Emory County, and they had told me in 3 weeks I could start. So I figured I'll give my 2 weeks at my current job. I'll have a week off. My dad was on vacation. I'm going to go camping, just kind of spend the rest of the summer doing whatever. And then when that job came available, the guy contacted me and said 2 more weeks. So I'm like, okay, I'll figure something out. Also, the day I quit my job, I proposed to my wife. And so I was getting married in a couple months.
She thought you were really a planner.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You've quit your job and you're getting, we're engaged and you're not starting for another 3 weeks now.
Yeah.
And you're camping for 1 week with your dad.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
She loves me.
Yeah. Yeah. She'd have to, Jade.
She does. And so I waited the 2 weeks. He called me. He's like, 2 more weeks. And I'm like, I can't be doing this. So I was like, I need to get a job. So I just started. I went to DWS's website, found a job at the food bank, and I applied. And Jerry, I almost didn't want to apply because I was reading the job description and it said, bring your cover letter and resume. Well, it said, email them to Jerry Gambert. Me, I like things in person. So I went to the food bank in person, asked for Jerry and said, here's my resume and cover letter. And she looked at me and goes, I said to email it. And then just grabbed up and just walked out of the room. And I was like, oh my gosh, do I really want to work here?
It's a true story.
And so anyway, I went home and I...
and emailed it.
Emailed
did
it.
Did you email it?
I did email it.
Just in case. Yeah. Here's the email.
Sorry about that. And anyway, I interviewed and I was getting married and Jerry called me and goes, hey, we don't want you to work in the food bank. We want you to run this program, this VITA program, this Volunteer Income Tax Assistance Program. But then she's like...
I quickly realized, as I chastised him, how talented he was. Wasn't a normal candidate that
right,
I get.
Yeah. Well, you went the extra mile. So even though she may have been a little irritated, it may have panned out in the long run.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
I don't think anybody's ever hurt by going the extra mile. So congratulations, Jade.
My feelings were hurt a little
bit. I'm sure.
At that time, but I quickly got over it. So, but here's the kicker. She calls me and says, I want you to do the Volunteer Income Tax Assistance Program, but we're waiting on a contract from the state with the grant that would pay you. So it's going to be about 2 weeks. And I'm like, I've heard this before.
Yeah. So but, now we're 4 weeks out. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I stuck it out. And that's kind of what led me is running that Volunteer Income Tax Assistance Program. I was part-time to begin with. And then when Jerry became executive director, it was like 8 and 9 months after I had started, she brought me full time to do the community development block grant program. And then that's when I transitioned into doing more community and economic development planning.
So tell me, I mean, you've traveled some distance to be here with us today. So, and you've talked about the geographical area of the four counties, but what's the governing body? Who do you actually report to?
So the makeup of our executive board is made up of one mayor and one commissioner from each county.
Okay, and so I'm assuming the COGS vote on the mayor and the county commissioner, or do they vote on just the mayor and then?
There's only one county that has an operating COG, and that's Emory County.
Okay.
So it can be by the vote of the board, how our bylaws read.
Okay. So your board then votes on who. Yes. So then you've got, I'm assuming, doing my math, 2 from each county. There's 4 counties. That adds up to 8.
You're doing well.
Thank you. So, but that could also result in a tie vote.
Yes.
Do you ever have tie votes?
No.
No? Everybody usually is on the same page.
Yes.
Should there be a tie vote, what happens? A coin toss? Is it?
Rock, paper, scissors.
then it just dies.
Okay. So, but everybody generally is on the same page because they all are, you know, facing the same kinds of issues.
We all want to see each county succeed. And so even if it's a specific focus on just one county and not the region, they tend to be very supportive.
And do you have term limits on the board?
Yes.
And so how long can a commissioner or mayor serve?
They can serve 2 years. Our chairman definitely is 2 years, but if they keep being reelected, then they can stay there as well. So you can vote every 2 years to keep everyone in the same place.
Okay.
So we have longevity on our board.
That helps with stability, I would imagine.
And just knowledge of how it all works.
Right. You're not having to re-educate, retrain.
It's a huge challenge in government.
Oh yeah. No, no question. I often joke, you know, about seniority and longevity in government, that every member of Congress should understand that when they get elected, they should just be, you know, there for 10 years. And then at the end of 10 years, they can start, you know, having a voice, because it really does take a long time to figure out. So these areas that are constantly changing their elected officials, you know, and I'm sure there's some good reasons why people change their elected officials, but it doesn't always add to continuity of delivery of service or understanding or historical perspective on what's gone on and why, you know, changes get made. But
it can be a little bit like herding cats.
Yeah, no question. No question. How long have you been in your position?
I'm going on my fifth year.
Okay.
Well, I'm ending my fifth year, starting my sixth.
What would you say, if you were to look back on the 5 years, what would you say you'd consider one of the great achievements of the League of the League of Governments down there?
Making it relevant and connecting with Stuart Clayson with the Regional Growth Program. Those are probably the two big achievements.
And you currently sit on the state's Economic Development Committee, is that correct? Is it GOEO now we call it? Or yeah. GO Utah?
Yeah, it's the GOEO board.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which is
Governor's Office of Economic Opportunity.
Which is a huge win for your area, I would say.
It's definitely, you get to know people, and that's important. Having a presence makes all the difference.
How long have you been on that board?
Less than a year.
Okay. So that was you were a Governor Cox appointment.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Probably didn't hurt that you worship at the feet of John Pierpont, I would imagine. But
I don't know if he knows I worship him. But
well, he certainly will now. Yes.
I am a fan.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Hey, thank you so much for coming and spending 20 minutes with us here on Stokes and Folks and helping to educate a lot of the listeners about what you do. And the fact that these exist throughout the state, I think it's kind of an area of government that not very many people know about and not very many people are clued into, but certainly a huge part of delivery of some of the really most essential services across our state. So thanks for being here. This has been another edition of Stokes and Folks. Thanks for listening. Remember to like us wherever you get your podcasts, and we'll speak to you again next week.